We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to a Thursday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is April 27th. We are nearing the end of round one of the NBA playoffs. I am Nick Whalen, joined as always by Alex Barutha. Alex, we may also be nearing the end of Mike Budenholzer's tenure as head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. And I got to be honest, man, I think I'd be okay with that at this point.
Yes, I would be okay with that as well. I was kind of at that place before the Bucks won the title. And I think, you know, it doesn't entirely fall on him what happened in the series, but I think they're a lot of it falls on him for sure.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of blame to be spread around. I mean, one of my favorite things, usually I don't like doing this when I have to talk about the teams that I live and die by, one of those being the Milwaukee Bucks. But I do love, you know, as an NBA analyst, you and I are both that professionally. I like to try to contextualize things like this when they happen. And where does this come in terms of like all-time collapses? Because I'm sure, you know, we're less than 24 hours removed. You know, maybe a week from now we'll feel differently. But I mean, it's really difficult to come up with back-to-back games where, you know, a team, especially a team as heavily favored as Milwaukee, blows double-digit fourth quarter leads. I mean, last night was, that's as bad as you're ever going to see in the NBA.
Yes. Game four, I think, didn't feel as bad, partially because I think some of it was like, you know, Drew and Giannis made some, just like they kind of fumbled the ball away on a couple of possessions, and it's like that's kind of stuff you can live with, like some kind they lose possession. Game five felt so bad because they, you know, the game was close throughout most of it, and then the Bucks went on this like really strong 6-minute stretch where it's like, where the hell was this team the entire series? Like they looked dominant for 6 minutes. The Heat were raggled, the Bucks were clicking on offense, and then all of a sudden they just fell back into all their bad habits offensively. Again, part of it is they had no answers for Jimmy Butler, which continues to confuse me. I mean, there's so many things you can point to. It's just Budenholzer as a coach and his lack of adjustments. It's almost like he has amnesia sometimes about what happened the game before, what happened the quarter before, and it's hard to believe.
We know he's not an in-game adjustments guy. He's stood by that his entire career. He also just doesn't seem to be a game-to-game adjustments guy either. No. Yeah, I mean, Drew Holiday, bless his heart, man. He's the best, you know, guard defender in the league. I don't think this series changes that, but he was getting abused by Jimmy Butler. I mean, game four was an all-timer by Butler. Game five, I mean, you saw Butler barking at Drew Holiday in the second half. Drew Holiday could not guard him, and they didn't try anything else. You know, they didn't try Jay Crowder. Like, right. Isn't the reason that you traded for Jay Crowder to guard Jimmy Butler, to guard Jason Tatum, to guard Jaylen Brown in the Eastern Conference Finals? You know, they dusted him off a little bit. Crowder didn't even play at all in game four. But you know, one thing that I kind of found myself thinking after this game was, you know, Milwaukee built this super deep roster. You know, they go 10, 11, almost 12 deep at times with guys that you feel good about, you know, all the way down to like Javon Carter, and, you know, they add Myers Leonard and Goran Dragic. Like, yeah, great, great pickup there. Does it matter in the playoffs? Does it matter? Like, it's great to have all that depth in the regular season, but in retrospect, I would now trade all of that depth for a higher end third or fourth scoring option.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think part of the Bucks' problem with their bench, like, I think we'd like all these guys individually, but they don't have a ton of different looks they can go to. It doesn't feel like a very versatile bench. It's still a little undersized with the guys that you do trust. And a lot of these guys are kind of like one-dimensional offensive players, and liabilities on defense are the other way around. But it's funny because, I mean, the Heat's bench is not good either. Like, you're getting torched by Duncan Robinson and Caleb Martin, and, you know, like, Kyle Lowry only plays 18 minutes in this game. And if it's like, if you can get those contributions out of guys, why are the Bucks not able to get similarly impactful contributions off guys off their bench?
Yeah, a puzzling series. I think, you know, this was one of the worst coach series that I can remember. I think looking back, you know, the title, I think, bought Bud some time that maybe he didn't deserve. And you look back now, this is five seasons for Coach Bud in Milwaukee. First season, they blow the 2-0 lead to Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals. They lose four straight. Second season, that devastating round two loss to Miami as the one seed. They lost that series in five games. Third season, they win the title. Okay, great. You get the ring. That's a big deal. Last year, you lose to Boston. To me, that's excusable because Chris Middleton was hurt. Still almost won the series. That was fine. And now this year, you take, you know, one of the most shocking, inexcusable losses in NBA history as the top overall seed in the playoffs, again to Miami, and again in five games. So you have one ring, and then you have three outright disasters, and then one season that to me is kind of a throwaway given the Middleton injury last year.
Well, yeah, winning the title is hard, it turns out, but it does feel like this roster could have one more title. But yeah, I mean, I just think, to me, this was the ultimate example of Coach Budenholzer's failures as an in-game coach, and why Eric Spoelstra continues to be regarded as one of the best coaches in NBA history at this point. With all he's done with multiple different rosters, one of the best in-game adjusters, one of the best experimenters in-game that we have. And it's so confusing. I mean, this is, even putting aside like Coach Budenholzer not calling a timeout at the end of regulation, not calling a timeout at the end of overtime.
Preposterous.
Preposterous. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. It just doesn't even make sense. I don't understand.
Well, sorry to cut you off. Did you see Max Drews quote? He was on the Le Batard show, like the local hour this morning. And he said, so, I mean, in defense, I think there were, what, 0.5 seconds left after Butler hit that fall away tip in. So it's not like you expect to get a great shot, but the Bucks had two timeouts. They didn't take it. They didn't even get a shot off. Like, Giannis didn't even attempt to heave. Good call there, preserving the 3-point percentage.
Right.
But Strus on Le Batard said, yeah, we came back to the huddle preparing for overtime, and Spo is laughing, saying they had two timeouts. Why do they not call a timeout? Like, the other team is openly commenting on your coaching between the fourth quarter and overtime. Like, that's how bad it was.
Yeah, and this is not a situation where the Bucks don't have a lob guy. Like, you have half a second left. Your play is presumably just like, let's try to get a lob to somebody. You have Giannis and you have Lopez, and even Portis can kind of get up. So like, that's completely baffling. And yeah, Giannis not taking a shot there is like, what? Like, I just launch it. But even more so, like game four, before the collapse, the Bucks were just absolutely abusing these Giannis ball handler, Brooke Lopez pick and rolls that Miami had no answer for. Lopez scores, what, 32, if I remember correctly? And then they just completely abandon it in this game. And then in this individual game, they spend, I don't remember when they started doing it, but at some point in this game, middle of the game, they start mismatch hunting. Like, they get like Strus on Giannis in the post, or Gabe Vincent on Lopez in the post. And Lopez and Giannis are just, they're drawing double teams. They're bullying whoever's in front of them, and they're getting easy layups or easy kickouts for three. And then late in the game, they just completely stopped mismatch hunting to go to the post, even though that's what was working in the game. And then it just devolved into a bunch of guys in the Bucks jacking up contested threes and Giannis seeing Bam Adebayo and going like, yeah, let's take him one-on-one instead of trying to set a screen or literally do anything on offense.
You know, it's funny. We saw like the greatest 3 of 19 game of all time by Russell Westbrook early in these playoffs. I think this might have been like the worst 38-20 game of all time by Giannis. I mean, he was not good. He was not good in this game. And again, the counting stats are going to say he had a monster performance. And yeah, you know, I mean, he turned it on a little bit, had some big buckets in overtime that kept him in it. But 7 turnovers, I mean, some really, really bad turnovers that led directly to baskets. 10 of 23 at the line. And the thing that stuck out to me most, and one of these almost turned into a turnover that would have lost the game in regulation. Giannis did not want the ball. He was going out of his way, basically playing hot potato. And at one point threw the ball basically out of bounds. And luckily Chris Middleton had to dive into the scorer's table just to save the ball and give the Bucks possession. Of course, Drew Holiday then misses a free throw, but Giannis wanted no part of that ball, no part of it. Because if he's going to the line, he knew he was missing at least one.
Giannis was a liability for a lot of the game. I hate to say it. Like there were two stretches of the game. It maybe was the only two stretches of the game where Giannis sat out because he played 42 minutes, where I thought the Bucks offense looked way, way better when he was not out there. And again, when he was out there and he was abusing mismatches, he looked great. And then he started trying to go iso ball against Bam Adebayo. So he's scared to shoot the free throw, but he took like multiple semi-contested 14-foot jumpers with the game on the line. Like
really bad.
What is that about? Early in the shot clock?
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Gallagher, who doesn't work for the Action Network, tweeted out the Bucks' offensive and defensive ratings in the fourth quarter of these games. They actually had a 126 offensive rating somehow. I'm looking at the wrong game. Sorry, that was game one. Game one, they had a 126 offensive rating. Can you guess what Milwaukee's offensive rating was in game five last night?
In the fourth quarter?
In the fourth quarter.
I don't know, 46?
59.3. With a defensive rating of 123.1 for a net rating of -64. Pretty rough. They had a 92.6 offensive rating in game four in the fourth quarter, an 87 offensive rating in the fourth quarter of game three, and an 80.0 offensive rating in the fourth quarter of game two, which they won. An unbelievable collapse. And you know, you kind of contrasted this with game four, which was another unbelievable collapse. But
yeah.
There's something to it happening on the road versus at home. You know, like when Jimmy Butler got rolling, the crowd gets into it. You know, they had that weird play where Giannis got stripped at half court. I think he wasn't expecting to be contested when he was calling a timeout. You know, there's like a dog pile and all of a sudden Jimmy Butler is leaking out for a dunk. Like the crowd's into it. You're like, all right, here we go. This is kind of how it's supposed to go when you're on the road. But to see this happen at home, man, I mean, just unbelievable stuff by the Bucks. I mean, this is a truly franchise altering loss. I mean, it might cost Mike Budenholzer his job. It might cost Chris Middleton an extension. They have a big decision to make with Brook Lopez. I mean, suddenly you look at this roster and we felt so good about it all year and it just doesn't look that great.
You'll have to forgive me for, I don't remember who made this point. Someone compared it to, I think there was a really bad, Dirk Nowitzki Maverick season where they like retooled big Mavericks. Time. Yes. Could be like that situation. But yeah,
I mean, for what it's worth, I think that's the closest comparison by far. I think it's very, very similar to that situation.
Game four felt like Jimmy Butler, you mentioned it, at home. It just felt like he caught fire and was just kind of like in a different zone. In this game, in game five, it felt like he fundamentally understood the Bucks roster and game plan more than Mike Budenholzer did.
Yep.
Like he just understood completely everything, like how to get in every little seam in the Bucks defense, how to take advantage of individual defenders, everything like that. And I just cannot believe, I don't remember seeing a single double team on Butler throughout this entire series. Maybe it happened, or at least in these past two games, at least not a hard double team. And I just don't get why not try that for, I don't know, a quarter, half a quarter, like
one possession,
like one possession. Cause who's he passing to? And like guys are getting open shots anyway. Yep. It's inexcusable.
Yeah. I thought defensively that it was the Bucks' biggest issue throughout the series. You know, obviously the offense came and went and, you know, Giannis basically missing three games. I don't think we could just gloss over that. They're probably not in that 3-1 hole. If Giannis plays the first three, but it is what it is. These breaks happened throughout the series. He came back and he looked basically like himself these last two games, and you lost both. So you don't really have a leg to stand on there if you're Milwaukee.
The NBA regular season has come and gone, which means it's time for a new way to play daily fantasy basketball for the playoffs. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played, and they brought three new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. With unique games like Fantasy Bingo, head-to-head player challenges, and over-unders in Fantasy Book, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. Again, that's play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. And use our code ROTOWIREMBA, all one word, ROTOWIREMBA. Use that at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step onto the court and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena.
One of the plays that stood out on defense was it was actually a miss by Jimmy Butler. It was late in the fourth quarter. Heat were down two. This was before it looked like Milwaukee was about to seal it up. They're down two, coming out of a timeout. And you know, Drew Holiday gets screened on the wing by, I think, Bam Adebayo, or whoever Brook Lopez was guarding. And Lopez doesn't show on Jimmy Butler and gives Jimmy Butler a wide open three from the wing. Didn't even get his hands up. You know, he's playing basically drop, like kind of half drop coverage on the wing. I assume that was the call. It's coming out of a timeout. It's a smart defender, Brook Lopez. Like, that was just so emblematic of this entire series. And at that time, you're like exhaling, thinking, wow, I can't believe he missed that. They're so lucky. How do you give him that look in that spot? I mean, it was that's how the Bucks defense felt the entire series.
Well, I mean, that's the Bucks scheme. Drop Lopez. It really kills them some games. Other games, it doesn't. I don't think they trust Lopez to press up because Butler's going to drive. But then at some point, you just have to trust your help defense.
You're up
you
too.
Yeah, right. You have to trust your help defense. You have to say, well, Lopez pushes up, prevents the three. Butler drives. Someone helps. And it's a little bit of a scramble. But this is why, you know, like we have, you have decent wing defenders who can scramble.
Goal number one in that scenario is don't let the guy shooting 60% who just put up 56 on you in the last game get a wide open look from three. If Jimmy Butler blows by Brook Lopez for the game tying layup and there's still time for you to go get another shot, that's okay in that scenario. That's not the worst case scenario. The one thing you can't do is give up that open three. I could not believe that out of a timeout. And then, I mean, the other one of like seven coaching blunders by Bud down the stretch was not having a big man on the court to defend the rim in a situation where the number one thing they're looking to do is lob it at the rim. And who's there? It's Pat Connaughton and it's Drew Holiday, who just had another nightmare defensive night.
I can't prove this because nobody was in my apartment with me. I didn't say it to anybody. I didn't tweet it. But my first thought when I saw the Heat pull out this small lineup and Bud subs out Lopez, my first thought was, oh my God, Spoelstra knows that Bug is going to do this and he's going to throw it to the rim. That was my first thought. I can't prove it to anybody. And that's exactly what happened. And I have to give credit. Ridiculous shot by Jimmy Butler. And I wasn't even shocked. Like the thing is, I was at that point, I was just so numb to it. Butler made it. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah, no, I you're so right. I felt that way too. And I guess I didn't even realize how crazy of a shot it was until you see the replay. I mean, he's at like a 60 degree angle throwing that thing up and didn't even hit rim. Like, he basically swished it falling to the ground. So you do have to give Butler some credit there. I mean, I think if anything, Milwaukee was lucky that they didn't get hit with a foul. It kind of looked like a foul. I don't think it was. If anything, maybe Butler pushed off. But you know, when a guy's going to the ground in that situation, you never know. You know, the Giannis foul on Strus.
Oh my
another
God.
Just unbelievable play. I mean, that just kind of capped it off when it was like, man, it's just not Giannis's night. It's not Giannis's series, even though the numbers look okay. You know, the one thing I will say in defense of Milwaukee, I mean, this was five straight games of just fire shooting by the Heat. They never cooled off. At any point did they cool off in the series. Even in the game that they lost, they shot 40%+. Game five, when it felt like they were hitting everything, Kevin Love has 5 3-pointers. Gabe Vincent's hitting huge threes. You know, Butler had 3 threes. This was their worst shooting game of the series, and they hit 17 threes and shot 38%.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I didn't feel like a lot of these looks were super heavily contested. Like, it didn't feel like, oh, the Heat are making these like insane complete luck threes all the time. A lot of these are just open, but I agree with you. I mean, this team shooting 45% from three in the series when they were a team. I mean, they were what, one of the worst 3-point shooting teams? They were middle of the pack this year, 17th.
They were I think they were lower than that. Weren't they like 27th?
Oh, in percentage. Yeah, sorry. 17th in total makes. They jacked them up, but they didn't make them very well. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But I don't, honestly, that to me does not feel like the reason the Bucks lost the series. As hot as the Heat got and how much of an outlier it is, that is not what I'm going to remember. And that's not what I think broke this series open.
I think you're right. Every now and then there was one that you're like, wow, okay, I can't believe he hit that. You know, even like the Gabe Vincent pull up at the end that essentially ended up sinking the Bucks. You know, if he misses that and the Bucks get the rebound, the game's over. So there were a few of those sprinkled in, but no, for the most part, you're right. It's okay. Why is Kevin Love wide open? Why is Duncan Robinson wide open at the top of the key after an offensive rebound? They shot above their level, but yeah, I'm just kind of picturing the Bucks being like, well, eventually they'll stop making them. And they said that after game two, and then game three, and then game four, and then game five. Like, instead of saying, let's prevent them from making them, it almost felt like the Bucks just kept chanting it on the percentages.
Well, it's funny because it's like, if you're leaving these guys open anyway, why not just double Butler? Because when you double a guy, it's like, well, it's going to ping around and someone's going to get an open three. It's like, you're getting an open three anyway. Like, and Butler's putting up 90. He's basically putting up 100 points on you in two games.
Yeah, so bizarre. I mean, we could go in circles on this forever. I mean, Miami, I think, put up close to a 120 offensive rating for the series. Yeah, 119.4. The Bucks were around 111 defensive rate, during the regular season. Miami had a 113 offensive rating during the regular season. They were the sixth worst offense in the league and basically became the best offense in the league for this entire series. But credit to the Heat for sure. Heat Knicks is going to be a really, really fun second round series. Obviously it's going to be, it's going to take some time. I think for this one, worst of all, we've been robbed of like what I thought would be 6 weeks of like, all right, we're hanging out, we're watching the game, we're getting drinks, we're going downtown. Like, that's just all out the window. it didn't even get warm here in Milwaukee. We didn't even get like one fun playoff game to watch.
No, there's so much free time now. That's completely unexpected. it's unbelievable. Well, we might get to this. I was going to ask you, the Heat versus the Knicks, do you feel like after what you saw the Knicks do with the Bucks, do you feel like you favor them in this upcoming series? Or have you not thought about it that much
yet? The Knicks?
Yeah.
Total toss up to me. And part of that is the Julius Randle injury, you know, limping out of that game last night with an ankle injury. He's already been dealing with that coming in. Randle looked awful for the bulk of that series. And if that ankle's bothering him, to me, that's a big enough factor. Like, the Knicks have other guys. RJ Barrett played pretty well. Obviously, Jalen Brunson has been a machine, but I don't know that you're getting past Miami with Julius Randle, like, either missing part of the series or shooting 30% like he did in round one. So I kind of need to see that variable first. I will say, the Knicks are favored to win the series slightly, -145 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. And they also have home court advantage, too. I mean, that's the big thing. It's like the Knicks have not had home court advantage in any series since, what, I think like the year they were the 2 seed with Melo. So that's big. I mean, I don't feel like New York is losing both of these games at home to begin the series. Like, that seems that those crowds are going to be nuts. Like, this is also the first time in forever that the Knicks aren't going into the playoffs just with like house money. And it's like, oh, that'd be cool if we won a game or two off of this 1 or 2 seed. It's like all of a sudden, like, the Eastern Conference Finals is very much in play. Like, the Knicks are favored to make the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, they are. And I asked you because I was trying to figure it out myself. I partially think that both of these teams got through on their own merit, but I also feel like the opposing teams underperformed partially with some bad coaching. And so it was kind of a debate to me because we'll get into this, but I felt like Mitchell Robinson completely dominated the Cavaliers. I don't think he's going to do the same thing to the Heat. On the other hand, I think Julius Randle played so poorly because he had to deal with Evan Mobley most of the game. And now he doesn't really have that kind of defensive player in front of him in Miami. So I think this will be a rock fight. I think this will be a great coaching matchup. I'm not sure who I would favor. I mean, given what we just saw, I mean, you can make an argument for the Heat, but the Knicks, I think the Knicks should be favored. I'll finish with that.
Yeah, I mean, they were the better team. They were the better team all throughout the year. I mean, there's a reason that the Bucks were 12-point favorites last night. There's a reason that the Bucks were like almost favored to win the series even after they fell down 3-1. Like, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that the Heat are not good. You know, and I think at some point we expect that they'll turn into the team that they've been for 95% of the season instead of these last five games. And look, I mean, Tyler Hero's not coming back too. I think that's huge.
Yeah, the Tyler Hero factor. That makes it even worse for the Bucks. It's almost swept under the rug that Tyler Hero basically did not play in this series.
Yeah, that makes it worse. It makes it significantly worse. And, you know, I saw a take that it's like, you know, in a roundabout way, did that make Miami better because it just meant more Jimmy Butler? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe in game four, but I don't think the Heat would tell you that. I think they'd prefer to have a 20-point scorer in the lineup. And, yeah, at some point, it feels like they're gonna feel that absence. I think it's going to be very interesting to see the contrast between how the Knicks defend Miami and how the Bucks defend Miami, because I don't think Miami's going to be putting up 120 every single night on this Knicks defense like they did to Coach Bud.
No, I agree. If there's one thing Tom Thibodeau knows, it's defense. So I think it'll definitely regress a bit for Miami.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, let's talk Knicks-Cavs. I think, if anything, the Cavs are kind of lucky that Milwaukee is taking the fall here, because had that not happened, I feel like Cleveland would go down as the biggest disappointment in round one. I mean, this was viewed as close to a 50-50 series. I like the Cavs. I saw it as maybe 60-40 in their favor, partially because they had the home court. I thought they had the best player in the series in Donovan Mitchell. But I think it was quickly proven that Jalen Brunson is probably the best player in the series. I mean, just a really kind of disgusting effort by the Cavs from start to finish. I mean, it was just an ugly, gross series. I mean, they scored 79 points in game three, Alex. That says it all.
It does. I was with you. I thought the Cavs were going to win this series. I thought they were going to win game five. I felt pretty confident, honestly. But the Knicks outplayed the Cavs in every aspect that just wasn't pure shot making. And honestly, the shot making from the Knicks wasn't that much worse than the Cavs. Like, because you have Donovan Mitchell shooting 43% for the field, Garland shooting 43% for the field, and trying to get offense, consistent offense on anybody else in the Cavs was as much of a nightmare as anybody trying to generate offense on New York. And then the way Mitchell Robinson dominated the series is unbelievable. I mean, I when I was watching game four, I felt like I started noticing the way Robinson was getting these offensive rebounds more. And so I went back and I was like trying to figure out who was at fault for these offensive rebounds. Cause Robinson had 29 offensive rebounds in this series, and he played just 28 minutes a game. I mean, the Knicks were offensive rebounding 35% of their own misses. It's ridiculous. And without going on too much of like a tangent, so much of this was just Jared Allen falling asleep time after time, like complete nonsense. Like he's half contesting shots. He's like floating out of the paint on wide open shots from opponents. He's just not like it's so confusing. Like his sort of like box out slash defensive IQ in this series was unbelievably low. And I don't know how much of that is just Allen or how much of that was JB Bickerstaff, because JB Bickerstaff could tell Jared Allen, hey, you got to stop doing these particular things to give up offensive rebounds to Mitchell Robinson. But what's he going to do? Pull Jared Allen? He has no other options.
Yeah, I think the Cavs front court exposed first and foremost. You did a good thread on Twitter of some of those plays. And I mean, you're not cherry picking here. I mean, these are all pretty egregious. Some of them, you just kind of wonder what's going on there. I mean, the Knicks were a good offensive rebounding team during the regular season, 28%. But still, I mean, you would think Cleveland is like the one team that would be very resistant to that. You have not many teams play two true big men anymore, so you'd think they'd be well equipped to stop it. And it went the complete other way. Pop quiz, by the way, do you know which team led the league in offensive rebounding rate?
Oh, wow. Is it still the Grizzlies?
The Houston Rockets, baby. 30.2%.
Oh, my God.
How is that? Is that all Shea Gudon?
Maybe some KJ Martin. Notice that towards the end of the year when we were writing up like our best bet stuff, and I was checking in on like recent rebounding rates, and I was like, when did the Rockets suddenly become like a top five rebounding team?
Yeah, they're not a good defensive rebounding team, bottom half of the league, but number one pretty easily in offensive rebounding. The other thing with the Cavs outside of the big men was, you know, they basically needed Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to give them like 70 points combined in each game, and that just didn't really happen. Because they have no bench. They have no bench. And you know, the one game that they won in this series was the only game where Caris LeVert played well. I don't really think that's a coincidence. And you know, they've been cycling through guys at the three spot for the last 5 years now. And they just haven't found that. You know, like Isaac Okoro, not that guy. Dean Wade, Jetty Osman, LeVert, like they have all these, like Lamar Stevens was seeing minutes yesterday. They badly, badly, badly need to upgrade that spot.
They do. Not going to be an easy spot to upgrade, though, with the money you have to pay these top four guys. It's just going to be really tough for them, but they need to get someone else in there. I didn't think it was going to be as bad as it was. I thought each of those guys brought something different to the table that you could kind of lean on, but their weaknesses were just far too much, and it kind of exposed them. And like as well as they played during the regular season on offense, having those two non-spacing bigs really does complicate things against a team that is particularly game planning for it.
Kind of just bad luck on the Okoro pick, by the way. I mean, it's not a bad pick. Like I don't think he's very good. It kind of feels like he's going down. Like, you know, someday he'll be like Torrey Craig or something like that. Like he can D up. He's super athletic. You know, maybe the shooting comes around, whatever. But obviously, he's not going to be a star. You took him fifth overall, but it was just a weird draft. It's like, you know, Onyeka Okongwu went with the next pick. I love him, but you know, given the roster construction for the Cavs, that didn't really make all that much sense. Then it's Killian Hayes, Obi Toppin, Denny Avdija, Jalen Smith, Devin Vassell. It's like, I guess they should have taken Vassell, or they should have taken Tyrese Haliburton, but nobody was clamoring for that on draft night. Like it's just one of those drafts where you have the fifth pick in what was essentially a three-player draft at the time with Edwards, Wiseman, and LaMelo.
Yeah, Okoro, I think, is going to just end up being a specialist, which is okay. He just needs to be able to knock down threes, and I don't know if he's ever going to get there. I mean, he's over the past two seasons, he is 36% on two threes a game, but they're completely wide open. You know, he's just not cannot make a contested three, and he shot 31% in the series on 2.5 attempts a game in 15 minutes. There's just not. He's kind of a man without a country, position wise, role wise. And was not able to get it done in this series.
I don't think the plan was for him to play 15 minutes a game in a five-game series. You know, somebody that, again, you took with the fifth overall pick. Even if it was a bad draft, it's still a top-five pick, and you're expecting more out of that. And look, if you're going to be that specialist, like, that could work. We've seen it work for a ton of guys. Like, you don't have to be this knockdown shooter. You got to be a threat. And at least Okoro is willing to shoot. I know during the regular season, he, like, led the league in percentage of his looks that were wide open for a good reason. If you're going to be that guy, you have to be one of the five best defenders in the league on the wing. Yeah. You can't just be a good defender. Like you have to be earning your keep on defense. And I don't know if he's quite at that level.
No, and the thing is, on offense, some of these guys, like Jared Vanderbilt types, other guys at the wing who I'm not thinking of right now, they can survive because they become really good cutters, right? Their defender turns their head, they backdoor cut. They're good in transition off of cuts. But the problem is Okoro has nowhere to cut because two guys in front of him, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, are just standing in the paint. So he can't do anything in that respect either. So I think in other team contexts, like if he was on a team with a floor spacing five, I think he would look a lot better offensively, but he's a little limited given the guys around him.
Yeah, it's actually kind of ironic. Like Donovan Mitchell gets away from Rudy Gobert and now he's like in the same situation.
Yes.
With two big men who can't really do anything but clog the lane up. Yeah, tough series overall for Mitchell. Fantastic regular season, might be a first team All-NBA guy. Obviously, this doesn't really change the player that he is, but 28, 7, and 5 last night, that looks okay. But 11 of 26 from the field, 3 of 12 from 3 in the game where they desperately needed him. And the last thing I'll say about this series, and you mentioned it kind of at the beginning, the Knicks didn't even play well. They did not play well. They rebounded really well. They had some timely buckets in the fourth quarter of these games. But I mean, even last night, they win this game by 11, shooting 43% from the field and going 9 of 29 from three.
Yeah. But this is exactly who the Knicks want to be, right? They want to be the grinding out team that wins the possession game and plays more physical than you. And they did it.
All right, let's go Warriors Kings. And then we'll finish out with Lakers Grizz and get the heck out of here. You know, you and I were split on this one last night when we did the RotoWire NBA show,
yeah.
Which you can hear Monday through Friday on SiriusXM NBA Radio, channel 86. We'll be on tonight, actually, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening to this, make sure you check us out. We'll be on tomorrow as well. I was on Golden State. You were on the Kings. Look, I don't think you were wrong because I think your prediction was heavily based on the fact that not only is De'Aaron Fox going to play, but he's going to play well. And once again, it kind of felt like for most of this game, he was really the only Kings player who showed up. Sabonis ended up having his best game of the series. Malik Monk had a great fourth quarter, but it was too little too late.
Fox kind of fell apart in the second half. He's really good in the first half, and he hit a couple threes early, and then turnovers started piling up. Ironically, you asked me on the show, If you're fading De'Aaron Fox, who are you banking on a big game from? When I said Malik Monk, and he had 21 points on 14 shots, he had a big game anyway. But yeah, the continued just nothing from Kevin Huerter. Harrison Barnes goes 0 of 2 from 3. As a team, again, the Kings shoot 29% from distance. That's tough. And they weren't able to contain Curry. And part of the problem is they weren't able to contain Curry, who only made 2 3-pointers. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, people say this all. I'm not like breaking new ground here, but Curry's ability to drive the lane and get layups, high floating layups off the glass, partial contact is incredible. And he was doing that through a lot of this game. And it was awesome. And we can't understate how good of a job Looney and Draymond continued to do on Sabonis, although Sabonis had a very good game last night.
Yeah, easily Sabonis, the best game of the series. Wasn't quite enough. I mean, I thought Sacramento battled back like 6 different times. You felt like, all right, the Warriors are up 7. This is going to be it. Like if they hit one more shot, that's probably curtains for the Kings. And every time they found a way to get it back to a one possession game, and they just could not get over the hump. And Malik Monk was fantastic in the second half of this game. Like right when Fox cooled off, it felt like, I had this going on the second TV, with the sound on, Milwaukee, Miami. Every time I'm looking up, Malik Monk is like driving into a crowd and getting free throws. His ability to hang in the air, draw contact.
I was just gonna say, yeah, he's really good. He's incredible. I mean, he didn't get really any Sixth Man of the Year buzz, not like seriously, but I think he could have.
Yeah, man, he's awesome. And I think 2 years ago, like he was kind of on the like Josh Jackson track. Like he had some legal issues. You're like, is this guy even gonna be in the league a couple years from now? And I mean, now he's well on his way, I think, to getting a pretty nice contract, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are interested in bringing him in either as like a fifth starter or a sixth man. But yeah, he's been amazing. So cool to see him and Fox back together, from their Kentucky days. Keegan Murray ended up getting hurt late in this game. He played okay before that, knocked down both of his 3-point attempts. But really, I mean, Harrison Barnes and Kevin Huerter are just killing the Kings. They are killing the Kings in this series. Those guys cannot hit an open shot. It was another Really rough night for both of those guys. For the series now, Kevin Huerter, 4 of 25 from 3. Harrison Barnes, 5 of 22. A combined 9 of 47 out of two of your best three-point shooters.
It's tough, man, because I mean, the thing, at least with Barnes, you know you're getting quality defense out of him, so you can live with him not shooting amazing from distance. With Huerter, you're not getting amazing defense out of him, but, you know, where else do you turn? They're already playing a lot of Davion Mitchell to deal with Steph Curry, who's, again, not a great three-point shooter, and they're already playing a lot of Malik Monk. And, you know, the really only other place you can turn is Terrence Davis, who has played 13 total minutes in the series. So I think you just got to ride it out with Huerter. But yeah, both those guys are killing the team.
Yeah. This felt like a close to a must have for the Kings. Series is not over by any means. But we'll kind of see what happens here in game six. But I mean, Golden State's got to be feeling pretty good about its chances to close this out at home. They finally get that elusive road win. They're 7.5 point favorites for game six. And what a game by Draymond, by the way. I mean, this was like his best, it felt like his best offensive game since like game seven of the 2016 finals. He's 8 of 10 from the field. Like, he barely even takes 10 shots in a game these days. Was still fantastic on defense, was super fired up, hit a corner three late in this game that really gave the Warriors a ton of energy. And you mentioned Curry. I mean, not a great night from three. Had some looks that were way, way off. I mean, a couple of air balls, had one that like went off the side of the backboard. Just didn't really look like himself as a shooter, but he's gotten so good at kind of keeping defenders like kind of contacted on him, I guess I would put it. Like, yes. His head is down. He's not even looking up. He's got that high dribble, and then he could just kind of step back quick or change directions and give himself a little bit of space. I mean, 2 of 10 from three, but he goes 10 of 15 from 2-point range.
Yeah, Curry. I remain really fascinated by Curry's ability to get layups like he does, because it feels like when he gets a blow by, it's a blow by and then it's whatever. But when he doesn't like try to force a blow by, if a guy is kind of on his hip, like you said, he just basically like sticks his entire head in their chest and just like barrels through them, but just like maintains contact with them. And then, I mean, I think what he's doing is he's preventing them from jumping, because if someone's doing that to you, you can't really jump in the air. And then he just kind of, you know, he uses his body as protection, and he flips it up with his right hand and gets a layup. But it's super impressive that, he's able to do this in like, how old is he now? 35? It's shocking. He looks just as spry as he did like 5 years ago.
Yeah, turned 35 last month. March 14th was his birthday. Yeah, he looks fantastic. Contrast that with LeBron James, who had, I would say, one of the three worst playoff games of his career last night. And look, I remain convinced that the foot is a major, major issue for LeBron. 5 of 17 from the field, 15 points. Did get the 10 rebounds with a double-double, but had 5 turnovers. There was a play early in this game where LeBron kind of had a run out, got an outlet pass. There was like a one-on-one going to the rim, one of those plays that usually results in LeBron like ending somebody's life with a dunk. And LeBron like kind of collected the ball and like fell to the ground on a fast break. And I was like, all right, I don't like, this guy's not right. This does not happen when LeBron James is at full strength. But I thought he really killed the Lakers in this game. They survived an early blitz from the Grizzlies. Memphis went on this big run at the end of the first quarter. They're up 38-24. LA battled all the way back. They got a couple big shots from D'Angelo Russell, kind of similar to what happened in the previous game to keep them in it. But LeBron just never found it. And I think what makes this doubly frustrating for the Lakers is they got a great game out of Anthony Davis, which you can't count on getting that again. It's like when Davis gives you 31 and 19, you got to capitalize on that, because you just know the 5 of 15 is coming the next game.
Yeah, I think didn't the Lakers open the third quarter with like an 8-0 run? And I was like, oh, here, wait.
I think it was all Russell, yeah.
Yeah. You're right about Davis. He has a good game and you waste it. You're pretty far off the Lakers at this point. I mean, if they get to the next round, I think you've said there's a good path to the Warriors here, but would you consider betting the Grizzlies to win this series plus 340 for what it's worth?
Yes, I was just going to say that. I said it on the XM show earlier this morning too. I would absolutely bet Memphis plus 340. I'm telling you, if you've watched this series, LeBron does not look like LeBron. And I'm not saying he's like moved into a different phase of his career. I think he's going to get surgery on his foot and he's going to be fine next year. We've kind of seen this routine now for like 4 or 5 years in a row. He looked like a completely different guy 2-3 months ago before that injury. I mean, he looked awesome. That version of LeBron, the Lakers win this series in 4 or 5 games and maybe they go to the finals. I believe that. But LeBron, even in the games that they've won in this series, he's not looked good. He has not had a like, whoa, LeBron's back type of game. And I thought it was really strange that they turned game four into this like monumental LeBron 2020 game. Like LeBron looked horrible on offense for most of that game. Like, yes, he deserves credit for he saved the Lakers in overtime. I mean, that and one was massive. He saved what little energy he had for when he needed it. Like, I'm not trying to say it wasn't like a great effort, but anybody who watched that and was like, man, LeBron's the king, who's beating these guys? Like, hell no, man. Like, I think the Grizzlies have a great chance to win this series. I would plus 340 is. I mean, if this goes to a game seven in Memphis, Memphis is winning that game.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well. I can't say I'd like lock up that bet, but I think it's good value. And I'm with you on LeBron. We can sit here and say maybe he's waiting to turn it on until he absolutely has to. But I feel like if he had turned it on, the series would have been over already. So, it's just... Yeah, and they couldn't get anything out of their bench in this game. You know, Hachimura didn't kick his 18 points, which is ultimately why they
Hachimura
lost
sunk the Lakers again. No, I mean, you are right. We've seen LeBron over the years when he's fully healthy, you know, ease his way into these series. Like, there's been so many times where you're like, why are you not just like trying to step on their throats here? Like, why are you letting them get back into this game? So you're not wrong about that. But I think this is a physical situation. I think LeBron... I think LeBron wanted to step on their throats yesterday, and really for like one of the first times in his career, just couldn't do it. The other thing too is I got to kind of add this up on the fly. After going 1 of 9 last night from three, LeBron for the series has gone 1 of 9, 1 of 7, 0 of 4, 1 of 8, 3 of 8 from downtown. Oh. So he is 3 of 28 from three over the last four games. 3 of 28.
Is he in for you? Is he in like Giannis territory where it's like, just stop taking
it's Westbrook territory.
Do anything else. Westbrook territory. Okay.
He's playing like Westbrook now. Like LeBron with an injured foot is basically a bigger Russell Westbrook.
That's not pretty. I need you on Get Up or whatever morning show these days being like,
speak for
LeBron,
yourself.
Who would you take in a 7-game series? This LeBron or Russell Westbrook?
Yeah. Last thing I have to say about this game. I mean, you mentioned Hachimura was bad. He was a minus 18. Malik Beasley is not good. He is not good. He was a minus 23 in 11 minutes. The like Beasley, Schroeder, Troy Brown lineup that was out there for a little bit got completely cooked. All three of those guys were at least minus 20. Luke Kennard was a plus 26 in 18 minutes. He actually exited this game with a shoulder injury. And could end up missing tomorrow's game six. So, yeah, Lakers are in big trouble. I'm really surprised that they're this heavily favored. I think that's just the Laker bias, the LeBron bias when it comes to the sports books. But, I mean, they're only 4.5-point favorites at home in game six, right? Like, how does that equal, plus 340 for Memphis on the series line? Like, it's not like the Lakers are 12-point favorites to close it out.
I'm not sure. Do you want to guess LeBron's personal net rating, on off point differential in the playoffs? This also includes play-in, by the way, because I don't know why Clean and Glass does it this way, but
includes the play-in.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely minus. I will say he's minus 7.5.
Minus 38.8 per 100 possessions on off. Anthony Davis,
man, he's been bad on defense too.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, plus 42, Reeves plus 21, Hachimura plus 21. Malik Beasley minus 35. But I agree with you, man. It does feel like it's LeBron. Just he physically does not look right. There's only so many times we can say it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit of that. And I mean, the Lakers are, they still have that, we're too cool to play defense thing. You know, it's like,
yes,
you see it with Xavier Tillman and David Roddy more than anybody. It's like, all right, Tillman gets the ball like at the elbow and LeBron just kind of like lets him get to the rim and then plays for the block, and then Tillman just, you know, seals him and lays it in, and then LeBron looks around like, oh, I can't believe he made that. It's like, I don't know, just respect the opponent a little bit, like play a little bit of defense. And so, I mean, they've been giving up so many easy baskets to bench players, and it's going to bite them, man. I'm telling you, I view this as close to a 50-50 series going forward. I really do. I think Memphis is going to bring it. The Lakers do not, like, it's kind of a nightmare situation for them to have to play a team that's intense, like the Grizzlies, a team that tries. Right. Like, they don't want to do that. so yeah, I don't see the Lakers bringing it. I think, you know, they're one of those teams that starts slow. They, you know, they're kind of front runners. Similar to Milwaukee in some ways. Like, when things are good, things are really good. When things are bad, it's like, do you really trust them to climb their way back? With this version of LeBron, I don't. All right, I want to finish out with Finals MVP discussion. We'll check back in on these series next week. We'll do two episodes per week. That's the plan throughout the playoffs. But we have not really talked any Finals MVP. Right now, Jason Tatum is the heavy favorite, plus 240 to win Finals MVP. And of course, that's assuming that Boston makes it out of round one, and, you know, seemingly now has a pretty nice path back to the finals with Milwaukee out of the mix. After that, it's KD 7-1, Curry 850, Embiid 9-1, Jokic 950, Jaylen Brown 10-1, Devin Booker 10-1, and then you're getting into some more long shots after that.
Yeah, I think Tatum plus 240 makes sense. I think they have the smoothest path to the NBA Finals at this point. You know, my thought with these Finals MVP odds is I generally want to avoid teams that have two guys that I feel like could realistically win it. Like, I don't want to bet Durant at 7-1 because I think Devin Booker could just as easily win at 10-1. I don't necessarily feel the same about Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I think it's conceivable that Jaylen Brown has a better series than Tatum if it comes down to it. But yeah, like Curry, maybe Klay wins it. I don't know, probably not. So I think the most decisive player you could potentially have would maybe be Jokic, but again, you never know. Jamal Murray could step up. I would just be shocked if it would be so much better than Jokic.
Yeah, I think Jokic and Embiid are the two guys where it's like, how do the Nuggets win the finals with Jokic not being the best player? You know, like you said, there's a case, you can make a case for anybody. It's like, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe the Knicks win the finals and Obi Toppin has a crazy series. but I mean, if round one against the Clippers was the NBA Finals, Devin Booker would have won. He was the series MVP for the Suns. Not even close. Absolutely. So yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think Jaylen Brown was better than Jason Tatum in the finals last year. Had the Celtics won, I think Jaylen Brown would have won Finals MVP. But there is something about Tatum and Durant especially, and I think Curry's in that as well. It's like you those guys almost have to lose Finals MVP. Like, they begin the series with a lead.
100%. Yes, you get it. It's yours to lose when you're the best player on the team, for sure. I'm not going to say like Jaylen Brown at 10-1 is a bad bet. And I'm not going to say Jason Tatum plus 240 is a bad bet, but, I think it's usually better to pick someone a little more decisive, but these are fun. These Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals MVPs, these are like real awards now, right? So, do you have a stronger lean on either of those?
Well, first of all, I will say if you think the Warriors are winning the finals, bet Steph Curry to win the Finals MVP at 9-1 instead of the Warriors at 7-1, because there's a pretty slim chance I think that Steph wouldn't win it. I haven't really thought too much about the conference MVPs. I mean, it's kind of the same discussion in a lot of ways. I guess the spot there where you could maybe find some value is if you think there's a team that can get through but then would lose in the finals. You're like, if you're really high on the Knicks, but then you think they run into Phoenix or they run into Denver, or they run into Golden State and they lose. Like, I don't know, bet Julius Randle to be the Eastern Conference MVP or Jalen Brunson, right. Jimmy Butler. I don't know. Other than that, it's kind of just an extension of Finals MVP.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
All right, man, we'll wrap it up here. Just one game on the slate. That is Boston and Atlanta, game 6. They had to move the Janet Jackson concert to tomorrow. So just a heads up, if you're listening and if you're planning on attending that will be Friday. You can hear us on the RotoWire NBA show on SiriusXM NBA, channel 86. Our show will be at 7:30 Eastern tonight, as opposed to the usual 7 p.m. So we'll be on from 7:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern, I think, if I'm doing the time conversions correctly.
Yeah.
We'll be back Friday as well. We'll have two games, Sacramento and Golden State, and then Memphis and L.A., as for the pod, we'll be back next week and looking forward to it.